Welcome to the TRK Mailbag. My name is Tom Savage. Thank you for joining me on TRK Premium today. This mailbag is on the €2 tier, which is the everybody tier. It's normally on the €5 tier, but given that it is the end of the Six Nations, I have a bunch of questions from a lot of different people that I wanted to put there and just say, hey, look, if you like this TRK Mailbag, you can get up onto the €5 tier and get it more or less every week when I have enough questions to go. I have a lot of questions to go this time, so I'll get to the first one. This is from Quaylon. Hi, Tom. What, if anything, can we take away from France's leaky defence in this year's Six Nations? Sean Edwards is a renowned coach, but they conceded 4 tries to Ireland and England, as well as 3 to Wales. Could it be coaching fatigue, or did you spot any fatal flaws in their systems? I do think that all coaches have a shelf life, right? And the longer coaches are there, it only really goes one of two ways. They either have that sort of dynasty effect in the way that McCall has at Saracens, or the likes of, we'd say, Leo Cullen at Leinster. He's been there, 8 years now? Maybe even a little bit longer. But more often than not, I think it ends with things getting a little bit stale, as you've said. Like, I think for the most part, France have actually played quite well. It's just that I think when it comes to Sean Edwards' particular usage of the blitz defence, I think blitz defending specifically like that, like the way Sean Edwards ran it, to me is a little bit outdated now. Teams are kind of working their way around it. Certainly with modern attacking systems as well, I think that France at times looked like they were playing like 2019 rugby in 2024. At times. Now, again, part of that could be fatigue. It could be mental fatigue. It could be emotional fatigue. They're the things that we can't really quantify, in that France came in and missing DuPont, missing Romain Antemac, who's back training as well, by the way, with Toulouse. I think that when we look at those, I think we can't underestimate the mental burnout that a lot of this French squad would have had. And to be fair, look, the majority of the French coaching squad as well, you have to try and get these guys back up to play a Six Nations where just a few months before they crashed out of the home World Cup, which, when I tell you that people in France and the rugby community in France were gunning to win that home World Cup, that's what they were focused on. To go out the way that they did, losing by, a point to South Africa at home, it toss a lot of guys into a blender. You look at Ron O'Gara has spoken about a lot of the guys that he got back to La Rochelle in to start the top 14 season from the World Cup, mentally fried, that they just weren't in the right headspace. And as much as you could look at different pieces of France's game being a little bit outdated with the way that they run their blitz, at the same time, we can't also discount the mental fatigue. The emotional fatigue is usually the big one as well. Emotional fatigue, especially when it comes to defence. But also look at the change in their overall structure. Not necessarily Sean Edwards, but I think we look at that Full Contact documentary from last year. They filmed it last year. Came out there a few weeks ago. You look at Sean Edwards talking about, kicking the fucking ball. And defense and attack are tied in together. They're almost indistinguishable. Like, if you're a team who wants to punish teams defensively, that you're working very, very hard on building your a defensive system that can be an offensive tool, as in it can win turnovers for you, it can win penalties, it can, basically you can oppress the opposition with your defending, which, by the way, is physically less demanding than attacking is. To do that, you have to give up the ball, right? And to me, looking at the way France played in this tournament, I think they want to transition to playing more on-ball rugby. And this is one of the questions that's come up as well that I'll answer after this. But I think that most teams in 4 or 5 years will be playing on-ball rugby. The idea that you will play off-ball rugby in the way that we've seen maybe since maybe since 2015, 2016, it kind of started You know, you look at Razzie Erasmus's Stormers team with Jacques Nienaber involved there as well. And then what he brought at Munster, and then what he kind of really brought to the Springboks at test level, and how the way that they changed, in particular, the way that the Springboks went from being the kind of attacking team that Alistair Coetzee wanted to make them into the like off-ball defensive monsters that we saw from, you know, Razzie Erasmus, even up until the World Cup win that they had this season. I mean, that was mostly predicated on having a massive scrum, a massive defence, and a really top-level goal kicker that they didn't have for a lot of last year. I think that they moved away from the strengths of maybe they kind of had to make it work with Manny Libbock, and they wanted to try to play more in line with what he was capable of and what suited him. But I think that off-ball rugby in a few years, I think we will look at as being as outdated as, you know, the long ball in soccer. Or, you know, you look at now the way that the game in just to talk about soccer for a second is like, you know, the gegenpress or, you know, a high press. You see a lot of teams talking about that, about pressing teams high up the field. That can be seen at the moment as being a kind of an evolution of long ball, right? Or playing direct. And it's kind of counter-transition is a bit of a response to off-ball rugby. It takes all the security of it, which is kicking long, getting the ball away from the area where the opposition can score tries from, and defending. Because attacking is very difficult at test level. It's very difficult. It's easier to train and get really good at defense and set piece than what it is to have a really complex attacking system with guys coming from, you know, a number of different clubs. And I think that what France want to do is they have been an off-ball team in very, very similar to the Springboks in intent in some aspects. They were a better team on transition, even though the Springboks were really good as well. The French team at their peak, I would say, prior to the World Cup, were really, really good at when you kick the ball back to them after they've punished you defensively, at just like killing you with like Antimac, Damien Penault, Antoine Dupont, you know, never mind Gael Ficou, Thomas Ramo, all these guys. That was a core part of their game. I think what they're trying to do now is to change up their use of possession, which means that they're going to be turning over the ball more. They're going to be hanging onto the ball more in areas where, should you lose it in that spot, you're going to concede a try. And I think that that's going to be a key part of how, you know, your defense reacts. Because if you're playing a very conservative style where you kick everything in your own half of the field, but maybe even kick anything that's inside your own 10-meter line, you won't concede a whole lot, right? You might not score a whole lot either, unless that you cut up the team on transition. But the further away you play from your try line, the more likely you are to not concede. I think that what we're seeing is a shift in the French team to play a different style of rugby that includes more on-ball possession, that controls the ball more. And thank you for that question, Caelan. I'll move on to the next one, which is from Jason, who sent me this in direct message on Patreon. After the new law, there's basically talk of some law amendments coming in rugby. And so, look, I'll just go and list what they are. There was a kind of a state of the game post made on World Rugby, World Rugby's website, after they've gone over this over the last couple of weeks and months, where they're talking about how to make the game more viable. They're talking about how to make the game more popular. The actual name of this article, which was published on the 19th of March, which was yesterday, was World Rugby Reveals Phased Plan to Enhance Rugby's Global Appeal. Which is basically they've outlined the next steps in the process of reimagining rugby's entertainment factor, part of a wider mission to grow audience share over the next decade. Reaction to this has been fairly mixed, to be honest. The very first stuff, right, I'll just mention the stuff that's going to be basically, this is from today, right? So these laws are already now are going to be, the interpretation of them is going to be made a little bit more strict, okay? Because this happens every now and then where there's a new focus on bringing in certain things, which were always in the law book, but there's more of a focus on them now. So from the 19th of March, there is an expectation of strict application of current law by referees globally via the following law application guidelines. Now, the application of laws is probably a big, big factor in this game. A little bit more of a factor than what it should be. Focusing on speeding up play. Now, if we go back up to that headline there, reimagining rugby's entertainment factor. That's going to be the key part of this particular part. World Rugby want the game to be more entertaining. I think they want the game to be simpler. One of the things in the focus groups that they, when they speak to people who are not rugby fans, about what could make them rugby fans, is to make it simpler. Sometimes, and I see this myself, a penalty is given at the is given at a breakdown, for example, and people turn to me, rugby man, to go, well, what was that for? And usually I know, but the average person who's just watching it in is just seeing ref's arm goes fucking one way, one breakdown, goes another way at the other breakdown, and there's no obvious illegality there. And you have to explain, oh, well, he's hanging onto the ball at the breakdown. And, you know, it's just basically it's they want to speed the game up, which means they want to make the game simpler, which will make it more entertaining, which will mean more bigger broadcast deals, more fans through the turnstiles, bigger discussion about the game as well. This is from these are the three law applications that they want to have, you know, applied more strictly, right? Law 15.17.17. There's probably somebody now who, you know, does law for a living now is seeing me going, oh, .17 and going, you moron. Anyway, players will be expected to use the ball more quickly when the ball has been secured at the ruck or breakdown. Referees will be asked to call use it earlier, which will begin the 5-second count to play the ball away. This is the beginning, I think, of teams and World Rugby looking to ban the Caterpillar Ruck. They want to really get that out of the game. That's one of the things, if you look at the most complained about part of the game, is the Caterpillar Ruck. And like for box kicking, they want that part out of the game. It slows the game down. Commentators start moaning about it, which means that your casual fan watching on TV will go, this is a bad thing that's happening. That bleeds into the game where, you know, fans start moaning and groaning whenever they see a box kick being set up. They want the game to be played a little bit more quickly. So basically, I think this is the beginning of that. So referees will be asked to call use it earlier, which will begin the 5-second count to play the ball away. So when the ball has been secured at a ruck breakdown, that again, that depends. Like, what is secured at the ruck? Does that mean when the ball is available to be played? Or when it means that there is one of the offensive players has created a ruck, that ruck is now created. So is that when it starts? Because if it does, that means that it's going to be very difficult now to do Caterpillar rucks, because we've all seen them, the fella, you know, the scrum half rolling the ball backwards with his heel, and, you know, guys coming in and binding onto each other and whatever. We've all seen it. I think if that is done, if the secure, when the ball has been secured, if that means when the ruck is created and we'll say won, you know, when you look at the metrics where a ruck has been won, if the 5 seconds starts from there, it's going to be very difficult to do a Caterpillar ruck. The first game that we see where this is going to be applied is going to be very, very interesting, because that interpretation as to when, because like if the ball is secured, is that when the scrum half touches it? Because again, that will change up how they use the ball at the breakdown for kicking, for example. So we will see. Law 19.10. Hookers will be expected to maintain a full break foot to aid scrum stability and safety during the engagement sequence. Any adjustment must maintain the act of the break. That's one of those amendments that was brought in, I think it was pre-World Cup 2019. And sometimes you see it called, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you see fellas with their break foot out, sometimes you don't. It's basically look to try to improve and enhance scrum safety at the, you know, at that area of the game, which is, again, is very, very important. And they want to try and refocus on that. And then law 6.29, strict reinforcement of the 2022 law trial relating to water carriers entering the field of play. Maybe that's to do with Jenkins at the weekend having a cut off the referee, which again was totally unacceptable, by the way. Has no place in the game. Just made a fool of himself, really. So they're the three things that are going to be in from the 19th of March, which was yesterday. So these are now already going to be a focus for referees going forward from yesterday onwards. The second phase are law amendment recommendations for global adoption. So this is a package of law amendments to be considered by the World Rugby Council at its 9th of May meeting. Each is aimed at enhancing game continuity. So again, continuity, speed of play, entertainment factor. World Rugby are wanting to get rid of the things that slow down the game. They want the game to be quicker. When the game is quicker, it is seen to be more entertaining. That's not necessarily my opinion. I'm just telling you that that's what World Rugby think. So the recommendation to make adjustments to Law 10 in relation to players being put on side when there are kicks in open play as the current Super Rugby Pacific trial, which aims to reduce kick tennis. So basically, that's the DuPont law loophole, which when an opposition kicks the ball, if the there could be a defender stay upfield who is put on side when the opposition run, was it 5 or 10 meters, whatever it is. And that basically is seen as this shuts down counter-attacking rugby. I don't necessarily agree with it, but France have used it to shut down the opposition's counter-attack. So maybe it is, but that's the reasoning behind that is where you can't be put on side by a when a guy advances by a certain amount of time, if you are always offside from the beginning with. I think they're going to make it that you can only be put onside if somebody who is behind or level with the kicker puts you onside, or the kicker puts you onside. I think that's going to be the law amendment that they're going to go with. Basically, to make kicking a little bit more expensive, but also I think they want to nerf that counter to counter-attacking rugby. They want, when teams kick, that if you're upfield, you must stay still so guys can run beyond you and we can have back and forth rugby continuity. The flow of the game is a big focus of what they want to bring in on these law amendments. The next one is a removal of the scrum option from a free kick at a scrum, reducing dead time. This is a big one, right? Because basically it deprioritizes the scrum quite a bit, because we've all seen it. You know, there's been a few games where you'd have a free kick in a scrum and then they go, well, we'll scrum again. If you look at the data, supposedly it only happens once per game. Doesn't feel that way, which again, feels are reals when it comes to this stuff, by the way, because whatever is felt to be boring or felt to not be entertaining is something that World Rugby want to get rid of. So box kicks, for example, elongated kicking duels, caterpillar rucks. These things on their own aren't boring, right? There's been plenty of exciting games that you've seen that have had those in them, but they're felt to be boring. So as a result, they kind of want them out of the game. But the removal of a scrum option from a free kick at a scrum basically means that you can see how teams might game this, by the way. If you can cheese a free kick out of the opposition, or even if you could, you don't have to win the free kick. You can just concede the free kick. If you're struggling in the scrum, the opposition can't scrum again. So they have to kick the ball or run it. And I'd be interested to see how that, like the extra laws they put around that, were they to bring it in. But reducing dead time, again, entertaining, flow of the game, speeding the game up. They don't want to have multiple scrum resets. That's what that is there to get rid of. Which again, if you're a big scrummaging team, if that law is adopted, it basically means you are deprioritizing the scrum, in my opinion, because you still have to have a big scrum, and you know, not every team will be able to cheese a free kick for an early engagement, for example. Say for example you're in big trouble in a game, you're in the first half, you're up by 2 points, say England, for example. In the World Cup semi-final, say that they were scrummaging where they were, even if they don't have the put in, or even if they do, all they have to do is try and concede a free kick. So an early engagement. Go early. It's a free kick, not a penalty. So if they do that, South Africa don't get a penalty. You cheese more time off the clock. Because again, there's another closed law trial coming up as well. That'll be interesting in that regard. But that will be a very interesting way to see how it's adopted. Because if it's brought in as described here, which again is fairly simple, that is, it certainly changes the priority for what you want from your props, in my opinion. You still have to be a good scrummager. But at the same time, though, do you really have to be an elite scrummager? Because you can't punish teams repeatedly for scrum infringement. So if they concede early, you know, an early engagement, whatever else, you can't go, we scrum again, we go again, and look to try to hurt them that way. It's looking to try and cut down resets, which to me, it means it's easier to get away with your scrum not being top class. For the sake of speeding up the game, because again, the scrum, it feels like that slows the game down at times. And again, it's sometimes incomprehensible what happens there. One team goes forward, they get a penalty. Next scrum, the other team goes forward, penalty goes the other way. Sometimes when you go forward, you concede the penalty. It's confusing for people. Entertainment factor. People really aren't entertained when they're confused, I find. And then this, the second law amendment that's going to be discussed at 9th of May is outlawing the croc roll, which 100% should already be the case. We've seen so many people injured with the croc roll. It will mean, as part of the next part that's coming up, the closed law trials, is something I feel that inside the next 8 years, I think the jackal will be illegal in rugby. I think you will not be able to go over the ball at the breakdown and hold on to the ball. You know, to jackal poach turnover. I think that'll be illegal in 8 years, by, we'll say, the 2031, the future World Cup. I think you won't be able to poach the ball at the breakdown. I think they will look to have it back where you can counter shove, you can shove teams off the breakdown or counter ruck, but you cannot poach the ball at the breakdown. Because I think that one, I think that the way they look at it is that that draws the croc roll, and that that draws dangerous entries at the breakdown, which hurt and injure people. So if you remove that aspect of the game, you're basically bringing back counter rucking and ruck, you know, which again, I think when we look at the impacts that are there at the breakdown, I think the addition of the poach, the jackal, which wasn't always in the game, by the way, that only came in mid to late 2000s, I think that came in. That will change certain aspects of the safety in the game. It will change, again, how teams use possession, because if that comes in where, as they said here in the phase three closed law trials, expansion of the shot clock for scrum and lineouts and reduced kicking time. So basically, you have a certain amount of time to have your scrum completed or your lineout completed, so people aren't standing around looking at each other. That's a good idea, I think. Ability to mark the ball inside the 22-meter line from a restart, promoting attacking options. I'm not sure if that's true, to be honest. If you look at the way that most teams set up their restarts, I'm not sure if that's true. Because again, I think what they don't want is, because again, they're trying to speed up the game. Most of the time, what you see in those situations is ball is kicked to either the number 8 or the number 12 on the left back pin or the right back pin. That player runs into contact, set up ruck, caterpillar ruck, box kick exit. They want to get rid of that. So anything that is considered pragmatic, boring rugby, they want to get rid of. The ball must be played after the ball has been stopped once, not twice. Would absolutely change the game if that's brought in. That would mean that the minute you get a first stop on a mall, it's over. At the moment, I think that there's certainly an idea in the game that if you concede a penalty, which leads to a lineout anywhere from 10 meters, but around 5 meters, between 5 to 10 meters in the modern game, that it's essentially almost impossible to stop a team who's got a very good maul in that spot. Look at how many tries hookers are scoring as of late. And look at how many of those are literally just falling over the line at the end of a maul, a close range maul. I think what they want is to give the defense a little bit more options there. So if that goes to one stop and the maul is over, I think that's fair. I think it rewards good maul still, but it also rewards good maul defense, because sometimes, you know, what constitutes a first stop is there's a massive variance between referees. So if it's just first stop is maul over, that I think is a very interesting and radical change that, again, will speed up the game and also make it a little bit easier to referee. Protection of the nine at the base of the scrum, rocking at the maul, following successful trials in Major League Rugby in the USA. So basically, you can't play the nine. The nine has a pocket of space where they're able to play the ball. This is to promote attacking rugby and to get rid of the little, you know, scrags and bits and pieces where, you know, you're basically preventing the ball from being played. They want to play the ball. They want speed. They want pace. They want the ball in play for a lot of time. So that's going to mean protect the nine. That's going to be a law they will bring in, I feel. And play on for line out not straight if the throw is uncontested should already be the case, I feel. If it's a case that the opposition contest and the throw is not straight, turn the ball over. If they've stayed on the ground and there's no material difference, play on. Again, speeds up the game. That's kind of the main focus of those. And then there's a fourth phase, which is on and off field sanctions, which is basically the red card, about, you know, whether it's going to be 20 minute red cards or whatever. But the most important one for me, which is the replacements, examine the latest research on the impact of fatigue and the number of timing of replacements in the elite game to determine options that might create more space in the field while improving injury rates. That's going to be a longer term look for the shape of the game. But they're also looking to review a major review of safety and spectacle issues as they relate to the breakdown. For example, the impact of contesting the ball on the floor, jackal, as opposed to an upright driving game. Eventually, it will be an upright driving game. That's how that's going to work. They're going to be focused on getting rid of the jackal, which I think what World Rugby think is that the jackal itself is the source of a lot of the impacts and danger at the breakdown in the modern game. And it's going to be a big thing to get rid of because there's lots of players, their game is modeled on it. Ty Byrne, just to name one, but plenty of other players have a big impact at the defensive breakdown as poachers, as jackal options. I think in the long term, they're going to get rid of it and bring it back to counter ruck, which used to be the way that it was. And I think the game is a little bit more dangerous now as a result, because I've said this on podcasts before, if you put your head down looking to try to get that breakdown turnover in the modern game, you are going to be cleared out by some of the biggest human beings who've ever played this game, who are not only biggest but faster than guys who maybe were midfielders in years gone by, going off their feet and hitting you like a fucking missile. And of course guys get injured, of course guys get concussions in that area of the game, of course they get broken arms and dislocated shoulders and fucked up knees. I think it's inevitable that they're going to get rid of it. And the question basically on that package I've just read out there was, what are my thoughts on them? And I think that most of those are good ideas. Some of them, like for example, you're going to hear a lot of and see a lot of South Africans who are going to get absolutely bent out of shape on the scrummaging thing, because they will rightly see that as being, oh, they're depowering the scrum. That's a big advantage for Springbok rugby. As a result, this reduces an advantage that they have in the modern game. They will be worse off for it. That's true. But again, I think my own opinion on the scrum thing like that, I think you should protect the scrum in this game. I think that adds to the entertainment factor. But they're talking about reimagining rugby's entertainment factor and global appeal. Anything that confuses the game. And never mind, we were speaking about the jackal there. If they remove the jackal, by the way, it will make the game easier to referee, which means that the decisions a referee makes are easier to understand. Like, the biggest thing with rugby is guys not understanding what the referee, why he's given a penalty, why she has called a turnover at that breakdown, or why is that scrum a penalty when the one that looked identical to it beforehand went the other way. These are the things that kind of knock people's enjoyment out of the game. So they're trying to just get rid of all those. It won't happen overnight, but I think the game we could be looking at in 7 to 8 years time will have no tackling above the waist. It will have no jackal turnovers at the breakdown. I think it will be about flow into the game, because ball in play is a for me a bad indicator of entertainment, right? Because if you like, there's been games where, like, for example, like Scotland versus Ireland at the weekend, there was not a massively entertaining spectacle as a game, but it had one of the highest ball in play times of the entire Six Nations so far. It's not necessarily that, it's about the flow of a game ebbing and flowing from one end of the pitch to the other. That's what is seen to be entertaining, rather than being high ball in play. So they're going to try to encourage that as much as possible, which, by the way, to link that in with my previous question, I feel a lot of teams are going to move to try to play on ball rugby now, because World Rugby is going to try to deprioritize teams who kick and defend, because kicking and defending is based on slowness. The set piece of teams who play off ball rugby is generally slow, because they need to slow it down. So I think that that's going to be a key factor in how teams approach the game going forward. I think they want teams to be fighting for possession, as in, and sometimes teams do fight not to have the ball. That is a viable tactic in the modern game. My thoughts on it are, the game, there could be bits in the game that could be taken out, that could be made a little bit simpler, that could be made a little bit easier to understand for your average person who's watching it, who doesn't have the time to sit around and, you know, watch all the law variants that come in, to look at the explainer videos. In my experience, when people are confused, they check out. Thanks for that question, Jason. Joe McDonald says, are teams beginning to figure our attack out, Ireland in this case? They don't seem to be committing as many to the ruck. Even with quick ball, we're still facing a wall of defence each time. That was certainly the case against England and Scotland. But this happens to a team who show you as much attacking phase play as what Ireland have in the last number of years. This kind of plays into as well what I was just speaking about when it comes to the advantages of playing off-ball rugby. When you play on transition, like you're a counter-attacking team, that's where off-ball rugby teams are going to have to go that direction, I feel, to be heavy counter-attacking teams. I think that Ireland, it's not that teams have us worked out. I do think that the way that we're playing, teams have figured that we pass the ball short an awful lot. Short, choppy little passes in and around 5 metres to 10 metres in length. We pass long less than any team in the Six Nations, right? Long, in this case, is over 15 metres. But the reason why we do that is that we're trying to break teams up who blitz us. Because short passing around the blitz is the best way to do it. We've done that. We did it against France. We've done it at times against England. But what Scotland did in particular, I think, was very, very interesting, and it won't go unnoticed. This was in the Wally ratings I pushed out there earlier today on Wednesday, because I'm recording and publishing this on Wednesday. Scotland understood that if you play Ireland with our 3-2 shape that we play, if we get into settled phase play, there's no point blitzing Ireland at the edge. Because Ireland run with so many looping layers. So the likes of James Lowe, Calvin Nash, Hugo Keenan, in this case Jordan Larmour, operate in that third layer. When you have the likes of your screen runners of your pod, might be your first layer. Then your playmaker might be Crowley, might be Bundiaki, could be anybody. And then your second and third layers then are rotating. So if you blitz on Jack Crowley, or we'll say Robbie Henshaw, a short pass in just a couple of metres behind him has Ireland running around the blitz. So I think that Ireland look at that and go, against teams like South Africa, against teams like France, against teams like England, this will help us to beat them, because they'll blitz on us. We'll play deeper around their blitz, and yeah, we'll take some shots, but we will score tries, and we will get line breaks that will lead to penalties, which will lead to tries. That happened against France and against England. But looking at against Scotland, what Scotland decided is that don't get bound into rucks that Ireland play. Because what Ireland are very good at is trapping fellas into the breakdown. Scotland kept 13 guys in that primary defensive line more often than not, sometimes even 14, because they wanted to bait the kick, get the ball away from Ireland, wheel back our line out and exit. What they did was they kicked long, Scotland, they kicked really long in this game, and look to try and beat us on defensive transition. So what that meant was that they would send their small forwards, Christie, Darge, and their combo flanker, Jack Dempsey, who is almost a small forward himself, really quick, with the likes of Hugh Jones and Stafford McDowell in midfield. And they basically would be their strike team, responding to Ireland's transition. Ireland look for the middle of the field on transition almost always, or close enough to the middle. With the idea being that Caelan Doris or Josh van der Fleer or whoever, Bundy Aki, Ty Byrne, these are the guys who normally drop after the kick into the middle of the field so you can retain the ball at the breakdown. I showed a video actually in the Wales game looking at Ireland's work in transition and how we look for Doris, Byrne, van der Fleer as they drop into the middle of the field, because we know that we're heading to the middle of the field. Our forwards know that those rocks will need to be resourced in the middle of the field. So they drop to the middle of the field while our back line or our back three or, you know, Jack Crowley advance to that central spot. So we will meet there, ideally before the opposition, who were the attacking team, but who are now the defensive team, we hope that we get there first. And if we can all get into position first, what that means is that we have an advantage over them because we're playing faster than them. We're in position faster than they are. They're trying to catch up with us. Scotland did really good at beating us to the punch. They were really quick at getting their back five build, or their back row build in midfield, certainly, and their back line ensured they would be there quicker. We struggled a bit to get our front five in particular into position in those ones. So when they get there, they decided we're not going to get sucked into the mistakes everybody makes against Ireland, which is we're going to compress on their pods of three and do a two-man tackle guaranteed every time. Scotland did a different route. They went on a 1+1 tackle, which is one guy made the tackle on whoever had the ball. Because if you look at the Ireland pod of three, how many times have you seen, you know, three guys running and then the pass is done to the inside or the outside or screen back? Scotland stayed active, so they were man for man. So there was three guys in the pod, there was three defenders lined up in them, and Scotland made their defensive decision very, very late. So they didn't just commit to, oh, we're going to hit the guy in the middle of the pod, we're going to double tackle him. Ireland are very good at tipping that ball inside or tipping it to the outside. If you compress there, they pass to where you aren't. Scotland made sure that when they entered into their tackle, it was one guy on one guy. But then once the guy next to him saw the tackle had been engaged, that guy engaged, the inside player then engaged on the double tackle, and you were able to slow up Ireland, start choking up Ireland's ruck. Our ruck was a good bit slower in this game as a result. But what they also did is that when Ireland went to those outside structures, then Scotland didn't blitz. So when they didn't blitz, that meant that Ireland didn't have any fellas to pass around. So we had to engage them on the gain line where they set it. And we don't have a whole ton of massive gain line winners on the outside. Like, we don't have a Andre Esterhazen, or, I mean, Bundy Aki is a big ball carrier, but he's not a phase play ball carrier in the way that the likes of an Andre Esterhazen or a Damien Delende or a, you know, Manu Tuilagi would be. Not that he's any worse a player, but there's just different styles for different roles. So that would be the big factor in how Scotland approached that area of it. But they never got trapped in the ruck when they made those 1+1 tackles. One guy engages, and then once you know what's happening, the other guy comes in. They didn't get trapped there. They might lose one guy to the tackle, and then somebody else coming in to try to slow down the ruck transfer, but they always drew a clean out from Ireland. That takes numbers out of the line. It slows down the ball. And they made sure they didn't give us corners to work with. So, like I said, they set the line. They said, carry the ball into us. And they kept pushing us out to the edges. Very difficult to attack in that. Like I said, quick ball on its own isn't a great attacking indicator. It's about finding space. And Scotland filled the field really, really well. And we reacted by kicking pretty well. But sometimes, and again, I think Scotland's own attacking game was reduced as a result of this. Sometimes teams will have you worked out, and another question here from Ralph Cunningham is, how would you change our attack? Stretching your defence across the field as Scotland did on Saturday looked pretty effective in closing down our options. Be more direct. I think that teams are going to look to try to play on-ball rugby more and more. The reasoning why is that whenever you have the ball, the opposition don't have the ball, and most of the time can't score. But Ireland on Saturday, we held onto the ball quite a bit, and Scotland made sure that we had a lot of the ball, but we didn't have enough power forwards in the field. Joe McCarthy didn't get on ball enough for me. Andrew Porter carried the ball a lot. I wouldn't say it's his best role carrying the ball, but he's certainly capable of it. Great player that he is. But I would also say that Ireland need to change up our structure if we're going to commit to playing this style. Because people say, oh, Ryan Baird is a power forward. No, he's not. He is not. Joe McCarthy is. He has the build for it and can certainly do that. But we need to see it. We need to see him engaging more on ball. Scotland did a good job of him in this game as well, shutting him down. But he needs to kind of get beyond that now. Like, that needs to be the next step for Joe McCarthy, is understanding they're watching you. And maybe if it means playing a bit lighter, maybe that's what needs to happen. Because he looks at times a little slow for me in this Six Nations. As good a Six Nations as he had for his first one. Looks a little bit slow for me. His return on transition and his get up off the ground is a little bit slow. But like, James Ryan is not a power forward. Tyke Byrne is not a power forward. RG Snaiman is a power forward, by the way. He's a tight headlock power forward. That's what they want. They want guys like that. They feel Joe McCarthy can be that guy. Maybe he will in the future. But I feel we need more. We either need a big midfield ball carrier who can do that for us. We need a power winger who can do that for us. Or we need a power forward in the back row who can do it for us. Who can win collisions and who can get us over the gain line. Maybe that's going to be Gavin Coombs. Maybe it's James Culhane. I don't know. Whoever. I feel that the system that we're trying to move to needs that. It needs it as a priority. Because Scotland were able to just, they were able to jockey on us in this game. Like, we need to be comfortable in winning those collisions and playing very direct. And I think it changes structure. I think we need to go through a 3-3 shape, 3-3X, and all the accompanying changes that come with that. We need to go that way, I feel. Because 3-2X and that 3-2 system, I feel that that is kind of getting a little bit out of date now. And we need to be comfortable holding onto the ball in waves. And to do that, you need guys who can truck the ball for you. And you need to have those big power forwards who can do that. We will see how that goes. But I feel if I was to change Ireland's attack, that's what I would look to do in this particular case. These next questions are from Muris de Prayer. I hope that I have not fucked up your name too much there. Hi Tom, there's no doubt that Ireland have an abundance of very talented players and our system is in the process of some adjustment and may need personnel changes, as you alluded to. I was thinking about Leinster's collapses in games against La Rochelle in the Champions Cup and the Bulls previously in the URC semi-final due to bad style matchups. Is it fair to say that a similar thing happened to the same core of players against South Africa, New Zealand and England? There is an argument that Ireland, like Leinster, mostly breeze two games unchallenged and then have limited resilience when they face tight games. Is this fair and what can be done to fix it? Thanks for that question. There is a bit of truth to it. In that Ireland do breeze through a lot of games, and I think you can you know that's true, because how many times have you heard Andrew Farrell, like I'm his Ofala. How many times have you heard Andy Farrell talking about that'll be good adversity for us, that'll be a good test for us there now. Sometimes, and I think this is the case, look, it is the makeup of a lot of the season for Leinster anyway. They go through the regular season before the levels really jump up at the end of the year, and they can get caught. I think from an Irish perspective, that is certainly true as well, in that England caught us out. Whether you could say there's a thing about expectation with this team, where there's an expectation of a slam, and you know, England obviously weren't going to roll over. Sometimes I think that, like, there is a bit of truth to that. And I don't mean that's in an unfair way, but like I do think at times that this Irish team can suffer a little bit when it comes to expectation. But at the same time, they are playing really good teams. Like, La Rochelle are a really good team. The Bulls in that year were a very good team as well, as they are this year. South Africa, New Zealand, and England even. England were much better than teams gave them credit for. I do think with our style of play, as involved as it is, we are, we give teams a lot to work with. Now, their success in being able to beat that or not is another thing, but New Zealand knew how to beat us and did. South Africa would have beaten us had they brought somebody who could, you know, kick better than me. And England did beat us in this Six Nations. So look, I think for Ireland, there are certainly system changes that are there to be done. I think that the team could do with a bit of a refresh as well. But when it comes to style matchups, you're always going to have that. Whatever style you pick, there will be some other team out there who will be a bad matchup for you. There's, you know, very, very few complete teams in the history of this game. You know, I think to that New Zealand team of the early 2010s as being, you know, the most complete team ever. They didn't really have bad matchups with anybody because they were everybody's bad matchup. But I do think that there is some truth to that in how sometimes, again, with that style matchup that Irish, like that the Ireland national team has shown ability that they go away a little bit quickly. But at the same time, though, like Ireland could still have beaten England. And you look at that game against New Zealand where we were only 4 points off it as well at the end. That's all true as well. So like this Irish team at the moment, I think, has a very high floor. What I mean is that they're very rarely the absolute shits in a game and get blown out of it. Like that very rarely happens to this Irish team. Their top end, I think, can fluctuate. At their best, I think this Irish team, when they play at their very, very best, there's nothing at all any other team in the world can do about it, even the Springboks. But we have certain areas where we are a bad matchup, where we have bad matchups with the Springboks, we'll say, in the scrum, like we do with France. I think that the more we play with the ball in hand, the more teams will look at our attacking structure. When we were playing kind of heavy counter-transition rugby with, you know, in Sexton's last 2 years, we gave teams not a whole lot to work with. We gave them our concepts that they knew very much what we were doing, but we gave them very little purchase. There was very little for them to work with. If we play more on-ball rugby, we're going to give them more to work with. They're going to have more to see our structures, who our primary ball carriers are, how they like to carry, what our structures behind those are, what shapes we like to play in, what we like to do in certain circumstances. That's why, again, it's easier to kick. That's why it's easier to be a heavier kicking team. And Ireland have reduced our kicks. We've upped the amount of passes we're playing, which means that we're playing more passes per ruck than what we were last year under Sexton, which again, that is a style change. I think that there is more personnel to add to this team who are in the country currently. We're not talking about making new, you know, debuting guys, but we will see what the appetite is for those changes and if there's anything driving them, because like change will only happen to this Irish team if Ireland start to lose and we've just won the Six Nations. The tour to South Africa is going to be very interesting to see who goes on that and what our intent on that is. Are we going down there to win that, or are we going to go, are we going there to develop it? So we're basically not giving the Springboks anything to work with. So if we send down a full team for that, like as in the team who played against Scotland and England, for example, like if we send that team down, it'll be looked at as that best in the world decider for the first major game of the Springboks post-World Cup. Or if we send down something of a shadow team or a rotated team, go, yeah, you take your win. Well done. We're going to use this to develop guys. And then meet you again down the road. We'll see what they do. I personally think they're going to go with the first option and all the lumps that come with it. But yeah, no, I do think that, you know, from a style perspective, the more proactive we are, the better I feel in moving to on-ball rugby. But I think as well, when it comes to expectation and stuff like that, that is a factor. But at the same time, I can't say that this team has been, you know, shown mental weakness or anything like that, because the margins of loss were so small. Now, again, I do think we started that New Zealand game in the quarterfinal rattled. We came into that game rattled. Johnny Sexton looked like he was swallowing an anvil before he came out in that game. Not what you want to see. So that's something that I do think is a work on, but we will never know what that is until we see the results one way or the other. So look, thank you very much for those questions. I'll have another TRK mail back out, part two of the one I did last week on Thursday. If you like these podcasts in the mailbag, you can join me on the €5 tier, where they're out every other week or so. Thank you very much for joining me. I'll talk to you again very, very soon.